Greetings, geeks, and welcome to the Geek Embassy's Summer Blockbuster Podcast Series. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and I'm here today with Mark Schull and Ryan Broom from the Geek Embassy. Yay, say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello, guys.
And we are going to be talking about some of the big summer blockbuster movies this summer. And we're launching this series this month of May with, I think, the big movie, or at least one of the first big movies, right, for the summer series, so summer season?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so. Because May is kind of early for, you know, summer.
And I think the only other real big one this month that I can think of is Aliens Covenant, which started tonight, so.
Okay. Yeah, so we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So.
Nice.
All right, so let's get your overall impressions. What do you guys think?
I think Ryan should go first.
Well, I went into it not expecting, you know, for it to be super awesome. You know, I was afraid it was going to be the Baby Groot show, and it was just going to be a little too cutesy. And I was really quite pleased that they kind of got that big bulk out of the way at the very beginning of the movie. Just kind of with the introduction and, you know, that whole battle scene with him dancing around, which was adorable, you know,
right,
to say the least. But then they could move on. You know? So
yeah, I had heard that too. Somebody saying that he couldn't stay Baby Groot, like they had to like resolve that in this movie. And I was like, you know, I hadn't even thought about that. But
I have to say that opening is probably one of my favorite openings to a movie now. It's right up there with the Deadpool opening and the Zombieland opening. I thought it was really well done. And I was with you, Ryan. I didn't think they were going to overuse Groot. I was looking forward to seeing Baby Groot, but I didn't want him, you know, a big focus of the whole movie. So like you said, them getting him right out in the open early with his own basic, you know, intro sequence when it's just the credits and there's nothing to lose or gain by having him there was, I think, a brilliant bit of direction and editing.
Right. And it got that, you know, it helped pick up from kind of where they left off at the end of Volume 1, you know, obviously a little bit further along because Groot was out of the little pot. In.
Yeah.
But them doing a job for somebody, so just kind of showing that them continuing on as a team is kind of a, I guess, guns for hire or whatever it is that they are as a group when they're not being the Guardians. You know, it was nice. It was a good way to get through that battle.
Yeah. Well, it made it interesting, too, because it was fun to watch the action going on behind him, so you had that like that multi-layered action going on. So you didn't have to just focus on him. So if you weren't as all into, oh my God, Baby Groot, you could watch just the action in the background. So I thought that added a nice level of layers to it, which you don't often see in like movie openings where there's like layers of interest going on. So that was really kind of cool.
Well, I thought it was kind of a brave choice to have all that CG and to have it out of focus in the background most of the time. That was a lot of money's worth of CG there. And then, okay, now let's go ahead and put it all out of focus.
Right.
Well, or the way to look at it is maybe they could spend less time in the CG knowing that it would be out of focus. So they wouldn't spend as much time perfecting, you know, a texture on a creature or something because they knew that wasn't going to be fully seen by the audience. So it might have actually saved them money.
Yeah, that's true.
That way.
Yeah, that's cool. That's good. Good observation. I like it. It was fun. Our we went to a theater where they deliver you food, and so our food was arriving. So I'm like, I was so frustrated because I was like, we're here early. Why are you so late with my food? But I was trying to like get my food at the same time, keeping an eye on the screen. So I was a little distracted during it, more distracted than I would have wanted to be for Baby Groot because I didn't think he was adorable.
Groot, yum, yum.
Yeah.
Yum. Groot, fries. Yum.
Yeah. Well, the theater we go to has truffle oil fries. Which are garlic.
So Cinetopia then, huh?
Yes, it's Cinetopia. It's so good. Yeah, those fries are so good. Anyway. Moving on.
So what did you think of it overall, Ray? I mean, besides
great. You know, I left very happy, very fulfilled and satisfied with the movie. The other thing that I would say that I was really afraid of after watching the trailer, because I watched trailers with my students, and, you know, it seemed like the characters were trying to be overly funny in the trailer, and that really bothered me. Like, they're really trying to, you know, overtop the or push the comedy way over the top. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh man, I hope this just isn't a movie of one-liners and they're just building off of, you know, the last one. It's like, well, it has to be funny all the time because that's what made it popular in the first place. And I was pleasantly surprised that there was a, you know, a really good heartfelt, you know, family arc throughout the whole movie. And it took you through a great range of emotions. And, you know, there was parts where you were laughing hysterically and then towards the end, you know, getting a little teary-eyed and welled up. It's like, oh man, that's deep. So, you know, it was great. I was able to just kind of shut off and enjoy the flick and, you know, smiling when I left. So.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I was really glad it had the emotional depth, which I guess I shouldn't be too surprised at because they kind of hinted that they could build that in the first one, although that wasn't the focus of it. And so to have so much character development in such an action-packed movie, I'm still kind of in awe of the balance it takes to have the kind of action they had and the kind of tender connective moments between characters that I wouldn't have thought were going to connect to each other.
Right, like the Gamora story arc was, you know, turned out really nice, I thought. You know, I thought that her character, you know, yeah, she's still, you know, got an attitude problem, but, you know, at the same time, it's like you kind of felt for her in this movie as opposed to in the last one where she was just, you know, constantly trying to be the better daughter type thing.
You mean Gamora's sister, Nebula?
Oh, Nebula. Yeah, that's what I meant. Okay. Cool. Sorry.
I was getting a little
sisters, the sister storyline. Yeah,
the sister storyline. Yeah.
Yeah.
With, you know, Nebula kind of, you know, her part with the Reavers, and, you know, it was nice to see her character develop more in this movie. And, you know, I really enjoyed her part of it. I mean, I enjoyed her part in the first one, but I mean, right. I enjoyed it on more of a moral high ground level, I guess, in this one than.
Yeah. She got to have a lot more. It gave a little bit of her background too. Which I appreciated, where she said, you know, they're having that conversation about, or she said to, I guess she said to Rocket that every time she lost a piece of her was replaced with machinery to try to make her as good as her sister. And so that was a good point. And then when they were fighting, they were having their, you know, Gamora and Nebula were having their back and forth, where she said, you know, you wanted to be the best and I just wanted a sister. And I thought that was really deep and a really nice and a really easy and fast way to make that point, and to kind of bring them together.
Yeah. So,
and it added depth to how she was in the first movie.
Or how she was at the beginning of this one.
Or how she was at the beginning of this one. It really did kind of give her that presence and that power. And I thought that was really nice because even at the end, she's still like, I'm going to get Dad. And you can have, you know, only so much of like that one note thing without it getting overwhelming. And so it gave her a depth that had they not put that in there, she would have been like the, you know, stereotype, you know, stock character that you just kind of the throwaway character you don't care about because they only have one thing, dimension.
That's exactly how I felt about it. Because when she takes off, you know, in the ship and says she's going to go after Gamora. And then, you know, pretty much the next scene, there she is, you know, gunning for Gamora with this ship, which was a pretty intense scene. But I was like, my first thought was, really? The very first thing you do is just jaunt right across the galaxy and start trying to blow your sister away with an anti-ship weapon on a spaceship?
And then, well, it didn't really end super cozy at the end of Volume 1 between the two of them. So, I mean, I'm sure there was a bit of a chip.
Right.
I agree. Like a brick.
Yeah.
I agree that was the case, but what I'm saying is it seemed a bit over the top until she gets that line that Regina was saying, which was, you know, all you ever wanted to do was win. All I wanted was a sister. Then, you know, everything is paid off in that moment.
Right. Yeah. It all came together. It all had a meaning it didn't have before. Cause of course she's angry with her because not because she bested her, which is the impression we've had up until that moment, but because of the emotional distance that having to the competition that he made between them created. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was really cool. I really liked their storyline. I really liked the emotion. That was the first thing that Chris said about it when we were watching it afterward. He's like, wow, talk about deep emotion. Because it's, you know, think about it. Summer blockbusters, that's not really what you're generally going for. So I think it was nice that they elevated it that way.
Right.
So that was, okay, if I'm going to say that was my, we had our list of things that we might talk about. That's my favorite part of this, was the fact that they took the time to create the depth of characters and have the characters develop with each other. And I have my cheat sheet here with names because I forget the names of everybody. So Yondu and Rocket, like their connection that, you know, kind of came up from being in the cell together. I was like pleasantly surprised over this.
Well, and like as we find out at the end of the movie, Yondu's just, you know, more of an act than, you know, a super mean guy or whatever the case may be. He really, you know. I think the way that that ended up with him at the end was, you know, with Star-Lord and that whole story thing with Ego and, you know, who's the real dad or who's the real father type thing, really played out well. Because I guess I would have been really disappointed if just Ego turned out to be evil without, you know, there being a whole reason for it. And they kind of hint at it at the end of Volume 1. You know, of why he didn't take him to him in the first place. And yeah, that was just a really cool kind of in the background storyline. And then again, with the whole family thing, you know, it really just played for the whole movie story arc was awesome.
Yeah, I really like that. Because he's kind of in the first movie, he's the last character you would think to self-sacrifice. Like you wouldn't have ever thought that of him.
So I don't know. They kind of hinted that he had a Chewy center, because remember at the end when he opens up the thing that he thinks the Infinity Stone's in, and there's a little troll doll in there. He doesn't get pissed. He just smiles.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, but I still felt like he had his overarching characteristic was
badass.
Well, that, yes. But more self-interest, like he was more likely to make the decisions that would serve himself more than that, even of his crew, which, you know, he was willing to, you know, pretty much sacrifice. I mean, they'd sacrificed his loyalists before that, but, you know, he had no problem blowing up the ship and killing everybody on board.
Well, they were the mutineers.
I mean, they betrayed him
at that point.
Right. Yeah, they had betrayed him by then. So, you know, he wasn't losing much, I guess.
I think it needs to be pointed out that I think Michael Rooker did a real good job in the role of Yondu. And I mean, not that I've ever thought that he was a bad actor per se, but I think I kind of feel bad that they eliminated his character from the movie, because I think he would have been a great one to go the distance and actually
show. Did they? But did they?
Yeah, they burned him up.
But did they?
Yeah, they did. They ran him through the thrusters of a ship and torched him. He's little rainbow particles in space now, right?
I don't think he's gone. I mean,
I don't know how they're going to bring him back. I mean, granted, it is a comic book movie, and comic books, everybody can pretty much come back, but... Well, oh, by the way, anybody watching this, spoilers.
I know. I was going to say that at the beginning of the show, but when I put the post up, I'll make sure to say. But I mean, it's a whole podcast devoted to one movie, so I thought people would come into it with the understanding that we were going to spoil the outcome.
Interestingly enough, if you look at the IMDb page for Infinity Wars, he's credited as in production.
No kidding! Wow.
So, I mean, more or less the entire cast of Guardians is credited in that movie. So I don't know if it's just they don't know, or they're just,
Or it could just
be the potential. They were trying to throw him off the scent, you know, whatever the case may be. But,
or, you know, there's always
flashbacks
because Peter's, you know, definitely dealing with his, you know, youth and growing up. So it could be.
Yeah, but in Infinity War, that's not a Guardians movie. I mean, I don't see them going a whole lot, you know, into the backstory of the Guardians of the Galaxy in a movie that's already going to have like 5,000 characters in it from the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. You know,
for them taking the time for Peter to have a flashback about Yondu seems odd to me. Why spare the time for such things?
Yeah. I guess we'll see.
We'll see. But, you know, like I don't know who just said it, but it could be that they just included him to throw him off the trail that he dies in Volume 2. So who knows?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I was looking at doing some research on it, and there was a website that was saying that there are ways with the Infinity Stones to resurrect a person. One of my students said that, you know, maybe the Scarlet Witch would have something to do with it. You know, if you think about Infinity Wars with all the different like talent that comes with that and the powers of those people, who knows?
Yeah. But again. Yeah, we'll see, I guess. That'd be interesting. I don't know. I love the way they connect all these movies together. It's
Even with the movies that aren't so great compared to the other ones, I still feel that they have something to offer to the entire story within the universe. So
yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Cool. All right. So other things that you guys loved, or shall we go on to things? Oh, do we want to talk about things we didn't like?
Well, I want to start with what I loved.
Okay.
Like you guys said, and I think what a lot of people are saying is how they actually took the time to move these characters forward and actually develop them was really great. And I loved that they really took some time with Rocket. I kind of felt like Rocket didn't get enough time in the last movie. He seemed like more of a gimmick to me in the first movie.
I can see that. He didn't have a whole lot of development. There wasn't a whole lot of time spent on him.
But I loved how much they, you know, did with him and Yondu. And one of my favorite scenes was the part where the Ravagers show up and he pretty much takes them all apart with all his gadgets and gizmos and bouncing around on their heads and everything. That was
a really cool sequence.
Yes, it really was.
Like kind of doing the whole, you know, pedestal up to see him in the tree, like giggling about all those little things that they're about to walk into. It's like, hey, I've made my own personal Hunger Games here. Let's see who's going to survive.
Exactly. And I think that paid off what we saw in the first movie, because in the first movie is like, you know, bring me this, bring me that, bring me this, and I'll make something, right? And you kind of get to see things happen from him doing it, but they're like kind of one big one-off thing. And in this instance, when you see that scene, you see all these little contraptions and gizmos and traps and everything he's got going on. I think that, you know, shows even more of his engineering and smarts there when he's doing that. So I really, really enjoyed that scene. I was laughing so hard I could hardly stand it. And as for things I didn't like or didn't love or didn't or hated, honestly, there was very little about the movie that I disliked. The only thing that I can think of that I was concerned for a moment, the movie was moving at, I mean, it's a long movie, and it was moving at such a clip, though. I mean, they packed everything in there that they could, and I didn't feel like there was any filler whatsoever. And right when they're kind of just in the beginning of the third act or in the middle of the third act, I felt like they were just careening towards the end. And I was like going, okay, this is ending too fast. It's happening too fast. I'm not seeing everything I'm going to see. And thankfully they did. What I was really worried about didn't end up happening anyway, just for a moment.
So it was like the pacing of it more for you that you were kind of thinking was going to.
Yeah. I kind of felt like they were just going to, you know, at that point, it felt like they're going to wrap up the movie in the next 10 or 15 minutes. And I was like, no, there's way too much going on for that to be happening. I don't know what it was about it. I was trying to think about it right after we saw the movie when we were leaving. And I was like, what was making me feel like that? I don't know. But I was concerned that they were just going to, you know, rush to the end, because some movies will do that. And I don't like a movie that feels rushed right at the end. You know, like, oh yeah. Crap, we've been here for 90 minutes, so right, we better hit the turbos and get out of here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel that way about books too. I hate books that rush the closing. That you get that sense that like they didn't put as much time and effort into the conclusion as they did like the first 2/3 of the book. I always dislike that. So I didn't have that feeling in this. I felt like there was a good space between like the big action scenes. So you had especially between Gamora and Nebula when she crashes the ship and she's trying to get at her sister in that attack sequence. And from there, they go down into their, like, they fall into the underground and find all the skulls and whatnot and have their quiet moment together. And I think if it hadn't had that progression of events, because then from there they go back and she realizes that Peter's in trouble, and then it kind of goes into the last big part. And I think if they hadn't had that downtime there, I think I would have felt similar. Like, it needed that space, that breather. Mm-hmm.
What did you think, Ray? Was there anything that you were concerned about in the movie? I mean, other than going into it with the Baby Groot bit, I mean, was there anything you didn't like or felt was off?
I mean, if I was to nitpick something, I would say just kind of on a visual scape, I got a little tired of Ego's Ego was great. Yeah. I mean, I was sad. Because I don't follow the Marvel Universe. I'm not, like, a big comic book, you know,
geek.
I don't want to say geek, but...
It's not, you know, a big, like, interest of yours.
There are people either. That, like, can tear apart that story, like, oh, well, in this comic and that comic, and yeah. It's like...
They left this part out, and they should have done this, and why didn't they conclude that, and they left this character out.
It's like
out,
reading the book before you go see the movie. It just ruins it, you know, automatically for you. But just, like, his little... when he was doing his little orb things to tell his story about how he went to different planets and stuff like that. And I didn't really like on the storyline where he revealed that he, you know, planted the tumor in Peter's mom's head.
Yeah,
I really didn't like that part. I mean,
well, he just dropped it so flippantly. He's just like, oh yeah, and I had to kill her.
It didn't go with the flow of the movie to me. That particular part, it just seemed, I guess, not very, for him being so tactful for the entire, you know, leading up to that, and then all of a sudden he just kind of turns into I know that's when he was supposed to turn into kind of the you know, oh crap moment type thing, but it just, I think it was not very well written, just that part in particular, and just the way that the little spinning globe story things, I got a little tired of that. But, you know, I thought the rest of it was, you know, really good. Like I said, that was the only thing that really caught me off guard a little bit. It was just like, oh, and when I put that tumor in her head. I mean, I guess it was supposed to be a slap in your face moment, but it just seemed weird to me.
Yeah, it didn't ring true.
Yeah, it just didn't seem like, it almost seemed like Peter should have, like, figured that out, not him tell.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I don't know how they could have done it differently, but it just seems like more like something he should have figured out on his own, as opposed to Ego just saying, oh, and by the way, because he was being so tactful about hiding the truth from Peter, and then all of a sudden he's just like, oh, like this, like he's not smart enough to realize that this is going to piss him off,
mm-hmm.
you know, type thing.
Yeah.
So it just seemed out of character for Ego, the way he was portraying his character. You know, all the way through the beginning.
I can agree with that. I think I can see from the storytelling point of view, like, why it had to be in there. But I think you're right in terms of the delivery and in terms of the character that had been created for Ego. I think it did just it was jarring and out of place.
Well, and it also didn't have the emotion it should have had.
From
Ego, because Ego said, yes. You know, I loved her so much that you know, I had to.
I had to stop going there or else I would never leave again. Oh, by the way, I killed her. Like,
yeah, at the very least, you know, then you should have seen some sort of gravity or sorrow. You know, if he really
there should have been weight to it as opposed to him. It was so flip. That was what it was, I think, for me. It was so flip the way he delivered it. And maybe that was partially direction. you know, that he could have taken it down, and maybe they were trying to go for, like you said, Ryan, the, you know, let's hit you in the face with this. But I think the delivery would have
wasn't
been a lot
the
more.
Same way. I mean, it wasn't a purposeful hit you in the face to the audience. I mean, I can understand the impact it was supposed to have on, you know, the Peter Quill, because he's being, you know, mind melded or whatever with the planet at the time. But it's like, it just seemed out of place to me, just not very well delivered.
Yeah,
you're right.
And I think,
like what Mark said, there was no weight to it. Like ego just...
The gravitas.
Like, well, you said it was just like a matter-of-fact statement after he just said that, you know, she was all this and a bag of chips. Which, on that same note, I will have to say one of my favorite effects that they did, which wasn't really... There was no CGI involved in it, was the way that they took his character at the beginning of that movie and made him look so young. That was all makeup.
Was it?
Yeah.
I wondered about that.
Yeah. It was all makeup, and it was the same makeup artist that was with him ever since Tango and Cash, like way back in the day.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there was some, a little bit of filtering, you know, maybe to make it look softer, but that was just, most of that was a makeup job.
Wow. Yeah.
Chris leaned over to me and he's like, "Is that who I think it is?" And I'm like, "Uh huh."
Yeah.
He's like, "But he's not that young." I'm like, "I know."
And they originally had intended to do a computer generated face over him. And because the makeup job turned out so well, they didn't use that stuff.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I thought that was amazing.
It looked a lot more real for that, I think, that it was makeup instead of CGI.
Yeah.
Which is hysterical, because I seem to recall seeing a review somewhere on YouTube or something like that, where one of the people said, you know, "I really didn't like the CGI they did with Kurt Russell at the beginning of the movie." That's funny.
Yes, it's funny.
But I would have done the same thing. I actually thought the effect looked good. I didn't know it was CG. It was makeup or CGI or one way or the other, but I thought the effect was really well done. I thought it was as well done as what they did with Robert Downey Jr. In the last, in what was it? In, was it Civil War?
Civil War, I think so.
Where they had him as young Tony Stark.
Oh, yeah, when he found out about his parents the day his parents died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I mean, Kurt Russell himself has aged well.
Yeah.
You know, just as an older guy, because he's got to
have that bone structure.
Yeah. I mean, he did not turn into, you know, like a withered old man, you know, in his time. So I'm sure, you know, with lighting and makeup, that's the cool thing about original movie magic, you know, just by using lighting and makeup.
Yeah, I was thinking of it compared to Carrie Fisher in
Rogue One. Oh yeah, it was Rogue One.
Yeah, in Rogue One. Compared to that, where Mark and I were talking about in the Hangout when we talked about it, how you could, what did you call it, the Ghost in the Machine or the...
Oh, the Uncanny Valley.
The Uncanny Valley, yeah, where you have that, like, disconnect between the eyes and the, yeah, like, it just didn't quite...
Yeah,
you looked at it and you're like, "Yeah, that's not real."
Well, hers was better than Tarkin, but
right. I thought hers was good up until the point where she smiled. When she smiled, then it shattered for me. I was just like,
"Yeah." But given the emotion that you know Kurt Russell's supposed to be expressing in that scene in the opening, I think it helped that it was actually his face expressing it as opposed to the CGI, because it would have been lost. Some of that emotion would have been lost in that.
Yeah.
I wonder what it means for, I was thinking about it at the end of the movie, you know, is Peter Quill, I guess, going to be lessened now that he doesn't have the power of that planet?
I kind of feel that's what they were hinting at, was that, you know, he was basically, you know, a celestial, and then once Ego, you know, died and was destroyed, that he lost his, you know, tie to that celestial power. Whether or not that's true or not, I don't remember if they actually full on said it, came right out and said it anywhere, but
I just kind of showed the light, or he wasn't able to like recreate the light beams with his hands, or they dimmed out or whatever the case may be.
Yeah,
just like
but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not going to be immortal, so I don't know.
Yeah, I was interested because his father, Ego, would have said, you know, he had reason to want him to keep the planet alive. So he may have misled him in saying your power is going to be gone if the planet is gone, to, you know, force his agenda.
Yeah.
Well, and he wasn't able to, like, recreate that power away from the planet anyway, so who knows?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, I love the first one, I love this one, so I can't wait to see where they go with all of it, so.
Yeah, I was really happy with how it turned out. It's one of the few times I can say a sequel was as good as the first one, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're definitely keeping, I mean, if they hold a bar for this, it's going to be like no duds in the trilogy. Which is kind of cool if you think about it. So did you have any music or song moments that kind of stood out for you as you were watching it?
I, just like the first movie, I thought the soundtrack just rolled right along in that movie, like, perfectly. You know, it basically hung in the pocket, to use a musician's term. You know, it was right where it needed to be the whole time. I never felt like it was over the top.
Or out of place or anything like that.
Right, and I really felt like those songs where they were really, you know, put a pop on the scenes they were in. One of the things I liked that they did was the song Brandy, how the song Brandy was actually woven into the script. It wasn't just, you know, there, you know, like the song. It was, yeah, she liked the song. This is what it meant to her. This is what it meant to Ego. And, you know, talking about
the significance.
Yeah, the significance of the song and how it related to Peter's mother, and then actually him going along, Ego later on going on and talking about the, you know, using the lyrics of the song to basically explain to Peter that, you know, this was all ephemeral, you know, it wasn't meant to be the main part of my, you know, existence. There was something else. So I thought
that was really brilliant. It was a really brilliant use of the song, of the themes of the song, of, like you said, tying the music back in, which is nice because you can get gimmicky with using, you know, sort of era stamped music the way that they've been doing it.
DC movies.
Well, there was even a moment where I can't remember. Oh, it was the I don't know if either one of you are watching The Handmaid's Tale, but, and I'm bad with music, so please help me with this. But the song from the end of The Breakfast Club.
Don't You Forget About Me.
Yes, that one. Lines. Like this series is very somber. It's very down to earth. And yeah, she has this moment where she starts feeling like she's kind of on top of things. And it just out of nowhere on one moment, that song blares forward. And at first I was like, whoa. And I was like, this is kind of cool. But then it just, like, I don't know. It didn't work. Like, as I went into it, I'm like, I can't hang with this here. So it had that off. Like, I knew they were trying to, you know, reach to that emotion from it. And they did need some kind of, you know, swelling music for that moment. But just to have it was like the first time pop music had been used in the whole series. And it's like, poosh, and you're just hit with it. And I was like, no. That didn't do what this is supposed to do. So they did, you know, kind of integrate it in a way that made it meaningful.
Well, yeah, and just from the music standpoint, not like putting it into the script, just it's very smooth.
Yes.
It's like, you know, you'll be in a scene and then all of a sudden you realize, you know, you're foot tapping or you're humming and you realize, oh, I'm listening to The Chain right now. And
I know, that was my favorite.
Yeah, that was my favorite song too.
Because I love Fleetwood Mac. So when that was, I was like, oh, yes. This is great.
What about you, Ryan? Did you have any favorite music moments or songs in there?
Well, I mean, they're all my favorite music moments just because they, you know, don't pick bad songs to be in the movie. I mean, right, all of them fit the
story,
the movie really well. I mean, being a Beatles guy, I really enjoyed, you know, George Harrison's,
yes,
as they're flying into the Ego planet.
Yes, and God, I loved it.
Just like, wow, that was, It's like, it was one of those moments where you're like driving your car down the road and like that perfect song comes
on. That right song comes on. Yeah.
Well, that is this moment right here.
It was the first time they'd used any of the Beatles, right? I mean, it's George Harrison, but it was the first time they'd used.
I think so.
Right. Yeah. So that was
one of the. I don't remember any of the, you know, I don't think any of them were in the first one.
Yeah.
I was just looking at the list over here.
Yeah. I love the Beatles, and George Harrison's my favorite Beatle. So I was like, yes, this is great.
But it was really cool. I enjoyed that they threw in some Parliament Funkadelic in there. I looked over at Candace during the movie. I was like, P-Funk All-Stars, you know. So I got all excited about that. Was that a credit song? I think that was a credit song. Flashlight?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think it was as well.
I like the way they did the credits too with the music.
That was very classy with like the 80s peachy album cover kind of look. And
yeah, did you, I know, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, Ryan, did you catch the, while you're watching the credits, where you would see I Am Groot, and then after a little bit, it would actually pop back into the actual credit was.
Somebody's name. Yeah.
There was that. There was little Jeff Goldblum, like, showed up from Thor Ragnarok. He was in one of the bubbles as the credits went up. And
There are lots of little, like, you know, Easter eggs in the credits. And I like the way, because I had read something that Jess had said, you know, definitely stay to the end of the credits because there's lots of scenes to see. And I'm like, there's lots of scenes to see. How can there be lots of scenes to see?
When it's like, there was five of them.
Yeah, but that was what I liked about it, was how they integrated it into the credits, where it rolled some of them and then it was a scene. Because I was like, what, there's like five? There's a bunch of scenes at the end of the credits, which was nice, because like this whole gimmick of having like the big reveal be at the end of the credits, like, gets cool. I mean, everybody's doing it now, right? But you know, you have to wait through all the credits to get to this big scene. So it was nice that they had like put them in there. Although, and
then there wasn't really anything
at the very end.
Very end? I don't think there was. No, was like, they played them all out through the credits. Yeah.
Yeah, they played them all out through the credits, and then at the end it just ended. And I guess the tease is about who are the
Watchers?
The Watchers.
Yeah. That they're mad at them and have Adam coming, I guess.
No, that's not the Watchers.
That's not the Watchers. Who are they?
The Golden People, is that what you're talking about?
Oh, the Sovereign.
Yeah.
The Sovereign, yes. The Sovereign, who are mad and have Adam. Ego. Or have Adam.
You got to give a shout out to the Sovereign just a little bit, because it was like, man, did they ever play out like everybody that sits in like a giant gaming group ever. And that is just like, it was almost like they mixed like the preppy crowd at the high school with like gamers, and just like their whole attitude on being in a battle.
The one that killed me was at the very end, just when the last guy was left and they thought they were going to get him, and then he got blasted and everybody else is standing around him, and they're like, oh, well, good job, Jerry, or whatever his name was. Right. I would have been pissed. I would have turned around like, screw you. It was at least the last one out there. What are you guys talking about?
How many times have we been in like a raid group or something like that back in the day, and it was just like, oh. And there's just like secretly under your breath, I'm like, you know. So I just thought that whole thing was hilarious. It's just like, right?
That's awesome. Yeah. I love it. I hadn't thought about it that way, but you're so right. It's like every MMO ever.
Well, I mean, it's just, the whole thing was like wrapped up in like, you know, deeper than that, like the entire internet culture. It's like these guys are talking crap from like their little home base, and you know, it's just their little machines getting blown up, and they don't really have to sacrifice anything.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
well, and
they take it so personally.
They do, yeah. Like, it's so, you know, it's just like, yeah, internet bro culture. But you know, it's going to get like, as soon as she was talking about like how beautifully organized and orchestrated their society was, and how everybody was genetically created and pods or whatnot, and all the sexual like stuff between her and Peter, I was like, this has got to go somewhere, and it's going to be horrible. Like, wherever it's going, this is going to be bad.
Yeah, they could have easily not done anything else with that and just had it be like a play out. And if you think about it, what made me think of it was the second Star Trek reboot movie, you know, where that whole thing where they're like, you know, trying to hide from the people and the Enterprise is underneath the water and they're trying to stop the volcano from blowing up. And I mean, because that didn't really get referenced a whole lot through the rest of the movie. It was just kind of an intro story. Right. So they could have left it alone, but they had to keep those characters in there. And I mean, they were hilarious through the entire movie. It's just like, you guys are ridiculous. And it's so awesome. Because it's just like, well, hey, look, it's human nature at its best, right?
Right. This is the world we live in.
I don't know if you guys picked it up, but the whole story of God, the Watchers, like throughout the end of the movie, where oh my God, having a mind blank.
The Watchers with
Stan Lee. Like,
oh yeah,
him telling the story of like every single appearance that he's had in all the Marvel movies. When mm-hmm. he was a FedEx delivery guy, and when he was, you know, this character or that character. I thought that was really clever. And then mm-hmm. like the end, people are saying, well, maybe he, I can't remember the name of the character. One of my students was telling me about it. Like he is like ends up being like the universe or the creator of the universe character. Like Stan Lee's that person.
Right. Yeah.
Talking to the Watchers. But as the Watchers just kind of wander off. Still talking.
Yeah. Very, very meta.
Yeah.
That would be cool though.
What did you guys think of Drax as one of the big comic reliefs in the movie? I really thought
it was a big comic relief in the first one too, just with his literal sense, you know. It was him and Quill that kind of played off that whole taking everything literally thing. Mm. Because Quill's always throwing out little sayings and references.
Nothing would fly over my head. I would catch it.
Yeah, I am too quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was one joke he made it was in reference to how large his poops were, and I can't remember what the line was.
My poops are epic.
Yes, I mean, I was just like, the size of my poops is epic, you know, and I was just like, this is so funny, and I wanted to write it down, and I didn't, and I don't remember what the exact line was, but I was just like, oh, that's awesome, I love this.
I loved all of his bits in the movie. I mm-hmm. thought that they were really... really funny, even though, like, you said, Rye, that, you know, it was kind of like, oh no, we're going to, you know, we're going to see this the whole movie. It's just going to be, you know, Drax doing
the Drax comic relief with Baby Groot as like his backup. And it's just like, oh no, please don't be the, you know, that kind of movie. And mm-hmm. I mean, in some of his stuff, like, I would still say the bit that they showed in the trailer where, what was the name of the gal with the antennas? Mantis. That part they showed in the trailer and was in the movie where Mantis is reading Peter's, you know, feelings. You know, and I think Drax's reaction to that is still a little too over the top. I thought it was in the trailer.
I thought it was great, especially when Mantis, you know, then goes and does her empath thing on Drax while he's laughing at Peter, and then she starts laughing at Peter too. Yeah.
Well, and I think, again, too, in terms of, you know, what we started out discussing about, like, the emotional connections, watching the emotional connections between Mantis and Drax was really awesome, too, especially when he's like, you know, well, you are ugly, but it's good to be ugly, because when people love you and you're ugly, then you know that they really love you. And his, like, bits of wisdom, and then how he's, how it was his sadness about his family, about losing his family, that drew her to not just him, but to confide in them what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so that I thought was a really nice sort of touch to bring it back to kind of who he was in the first movie and so much about his backstory that pulled her in a way that she hadn't been connected to them up until that point. You know, she'd been kind of like trying to play them like, can I tell you? Will I tell you? You know, back and forth. And then it was that sadness and that moment of sort of sorrow that he's expressing the loss of his daughter and his wife that, you know, draws her to him. So.
Isn't it amazing, though, how that scenario plays out in so many movies and yet mm-hmm. we still go right along for the ride.
Yeah.
It's just like all the characters in their separate worlds working out their little issues and like it's a...
And they're all working out the same issue, just in their same in their different ways.
It's right before, you know, the fit hits the Shan type thing. And it's just like, you think about it, and you're like, man, fell for it again.
Yeah, I don't feel like I'm falling for it though. I when I go to movies like that, I want to just relax and enjoy and have a good time.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. That's what's the genius of that story arc. I mean, it's been played out in hundreds of movies, and
we love it.
You know, it's still great every time. Mm-hmm. It's like they are so keyed in on the human emotion that they can just take you on that ride, and that's what was cool about that movie is they just blend it so well that by the end you're just like, wow, yeah, that was good. You're trying to process the movie, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I said, Chris's first thing was, wow, there's a lot of feeling in that movie. There was something that blows up so many things. Mm-hmm. Which I think is great because it really does kind of elevate the genre of action films just in general to mm-hmm. have so much depth of story and depth of character and character development because you can just rush through it. And that's usually something that'll put people off, especially in a sequel, where you spend a lot of time setting up who the characters are in the first movie and you don't do the same kind of follow through in the second, where you can kind of lose people. So it's good that they put a premium on that and didn't, you know, cut those things because it would be easy, right? It would be easy to cut the scene, you know, a couple of the emotional scenes, but having all of them, having those themes repeated really did give it its strength.
Well, sorry.
I was just going to say, I really liked the fact that the two movies in the series so far have an overarching theme, you know, the first one being, you know, we're all broken things and, you know, trying to find our way. And then the next one is, you know, all about, you know, finding your family, so to speak.
Right.
How those two things kind of, you know, how the one morphs into the other. And like you said, right, they do it really seamlessly mm-hmm. and really well. You know, you don't feel like they're banging you over the head with it. I mean, you're aware of it while you're watching it, but I didn't feel like it was, you know, awkward or clumsy at all in the way they pulled it off. So,
right.
Yeah, I agree.
Except for the tumor thing. I was like,
yeah.
Could have done without that part.
Yeah.
I mean, not that part, but just the way that they did that.
Yeah, well, Peter, and I think it would have been, it would have been particularly meaningful. And like I said, I don't know the source material, so I can't say. It would have been particularly meaningful if Peter would have come to that conclusion on his own, because I had already been suspicious of it in the first movie when she died so suddenly and had the brain cancer develop so quickly and take her so fast. I was like, and then all of a sudden he was abducted. I'm like, there's something fishy going on here. I wonder if the cancer, not that he had put it there, but maybe her having been involved with him gave her the cancer. Like, that's what I was thinking, like a human in a celestial body. She couldn't handle it, so her brain developed cancer.
Here's an interesting question that I didn't really think of until just now. Why did he not take Peter with him? Because obviously Peter was already born when he, you know, gave her the tumor in her brain. Why not just take mm-hmm. him then?
That's a good question.
I don't know if that's the case. I don't know that that's the case. He could have put the tumor in her head
before.
Yeah, before he left the last time when Peter was still, you know, in the womb. And who knows how well he can control a tumor or whatever. He could have basically made it so it was something that was going to grow exceptionally slowly or something like that.
Yeah.
So that his offspring would be cared for a while or something.
Right.
I'm not saying that you don't have a point there, but, you know, it is the Marvel Universe. They could. Anything's possible, I guess.
You do whatever they want, yeah. It's comic books, yeah. Well, did you guys have a special effect that you liked or anything that kind of made the movie unique that stood out for you?
I think I already said mine, just the Kurt Russell makeup job at the beginning,
yeah.
Using, you know, more traditional filmmaking techniques as opposed to making CGI. Sure that you have to throw the computer on him, you know.
Yeah,
I thought that was just
that,
really
yeah.
cool, and I didn't know. I thought it was CGI when it was up, but then when I found out it wasn't, I was like, that's awesome. You know, mm-hmm. the old tools still have a place in modern day films. So
cool.
I don't know. The whole movie to me is just a giant special effect. It's, you know, basically a big green screen movie. And
yeah.
That being said though, you look at the spaceships and stuff like that, like the Ravager ship and the Guardian ship and such. They to me feel like they are a living part of the cinematic universe you're seeing them in, you know, much like, you know, George Lucas made the decision to have, you know, all the ships and things like that in Star Wars look, you know, used and grungy and stuff like that. So they feel like, you know, they're actually part of the, of that, that universe. I think they do a good job of that with the CGI and Guardians.
I like the contrast too with Ego's ship being so clean and so sleek and having such a completely different look, which I know is because, you know, he's celestial or whatever. So, because of his powers, it was different, but, I was thinking of a Farscape in his ship. Like, it seemed like it was alive. And I thought that that was a really nice touch to kind of, you know, carry on. His power was sort of bodied by the planet and all that stuff.
It reminded me of the, Flight of the Navigator ship. If you guys remember that movie, just to where it kind of closes up into an, its own self-contained seamless. I mean, that one was like a chrome. Closes.
Right. Yeah. Like the doors. Yeah. The way that, the doors closes and seal, where it's not like you're feeling that pressure suck or something like that. It just kind of naturally has its.
Yeah.
That was really cool. Yeah. My favorite special effect, or my favorite, and Chris hated this, but I like the temporal asteroid field at the beginning. Where the rocks were spinning out of control, and are they there? Aren't they there? I mean, it was just kind of gimmicky, but I really thought it was kind of funny the way that they had it and had them fighting over flying, and it was just, I don't know, it was funny.
Yeah, I liked that little that dynamic with the group kept popping up in the movie, like at the beginning, you know, they're all fighting and kind of arguing while they're fighting the thing that they're guarding the batteries from, and then, you know, a little bit later on that with Peter and Rocket fighting over who's going to fly through the asteroid field. And then at the end when they're fighting Ego, and, you know, it's kind of like they're not fighting amongst each other, but they're like, you know, doing goofy stuff like, you know, hey, anybody got some duct tape? I know. That whole bit was just,
if anybody's gonna have tape, Rocket, it's you.
And didn't like Rocket say like, I know, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's
like, well, then why did we go through this?
And speaking of ships, is Peter's ship going to be like the Enterprise and just get wrecked every movie now?
Right.
I don't know why that has to be. That poor ship.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at least the technology to put it back together is pretty sophisticated. So it's not like they're trying to repair the Millennium Falcon with.
Yeah, Rocket didn't seem at all like he was under duress trying to fix the ship when they took off to go find Ego or whatever.
Well, obviously, he had all that time to make all the booby traps to take out the Reapers when they came. So. Oh, the Ravagers. Sorry, Ravagers.
Ravagers.
The Ravagers when they came. Good. Well, anything else you guys wanted to share?
Good flick. Good start to the summer.
Yeah, I think it's a good start to the summer, too. I thought it was really enjoyable. Good, fun movie that, you know, good way to kick off the summer movie series.
So, and then we all give it a thumbs up, I take it?
I would give it a 2 thumbs up.
All right. 2 thumbs up.
2 thumbs up.
Siskel and Ebert this.
We get 6 thumbs.
Awesome. So, Regina, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to be talking about the next time we do this?
Yeah, especially me, because I don't remember.
Ryan needs to know what movies to go see. Well, the next one is coming out very soon. It actually comes out, I think it's June 1st, yes?
Definitely beginning of June. I don't remember.
Yeah, exactly. The beginning of June. Or the next movie we're going to see for June, we're going to be doing this as a monthly series. So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 was our May installment. For June, we are going to see Wonder Woman, which comes out at the beginning of the month. For July, we have the new Spider-Man, which has a subtitle I don't remember.
Homecoming.
Yeah, which I got to see the trailer for that during this movie, and it looked really good. Oh gosh, I can't remember what we were doing for August.
We haven't decided yet for August or September.
So August and September.
Really afraid that I'm gonna have to like sit here and, you know, try and say nice things about Wonder Woman you being such a huge Wonder Woman fan, because I am not giving any hope to that movie right now.
Well, and you know, I have my reservations, although I've enjoyed the trailers so far. I think look good, but I'm always worried when trailers look too good. And I'm trying to hold off from it. I'm also trying to keep my own excitement in check. And it's a DC movie, so.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You should just be like automatically suspicious because it's a DC movie, and they've been trying to chase the Marvel coattails this whole time, trying to make those movies be as good as the Marvel movies when they should just step back and make their own good movie.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And you do not need to worry about offending me. I will not be mortally offended if it's, you know, you have, you know, questionable things to say about it, because I might be right there with you.
Well, and I haven't seen, I don't know if I should see Batman versus Superman before, because I still haven't seen that movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
Okay.
I don't think you'll need to.
She only had a couple of minutes of screen time in it, so I can't imagine it.
As a comic relief? I thought she was with you. And that was in the trailer, and it was just like...
No, I saw the movie. I watched the extended cut, which it was an okay movie. It really, really wasn't a superhero movie, though. It was more of a thriller with superhero
powers.
My favorite part of the whole damn movie, though, was Wonder Woman showing up and whooping ass. And because of that, and because of the trailers I've seen, I really have high hopes that this is going to be the one time so far that they're going to nail this and knock it out of the park.
I like Chris Pine, and I'm glad he's in it.
I've been trying to stay away from trailers just in general, because I'm finding my experience being tarnished just in general by watching movie trailers, and so I like to be more surprised. And so I was trying to stay away from Wonder Woman, but I'm on another podcast. If anybody wants to listen to me on a weekly basis, I'm on Gaming with Moms. Which you can also subscribe to on iTunes. And we were talking about the trailer. Yeah. we were talking about the trailer and that a couple weeks ago. So I did watch it for that and saw who the big bad is that she's going to be fighting, and because that's revealed in that trailer. And it does, like I said, I'm trying to be reserved about it because I don't want to go in. Like, that's one of the reasons why I stop watching trailers too often, because I didn't watch the original Guardians of the Galaxy Galaxy trailers at all. Like, I had no idea about any of that movie. Everybody kept telling me, this is great, you're going to love this, you're going to love this. And I'm like, I just walked into the movie having no idea what it was. And I loved it. And I watched all of the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 trailers because I loved it. And I'm glad I still like the movie. But it does, like, there's this whole thing about either getting your hopes up or thinking it's going to be one way and it's not. And so I'm trying to keep my expectations in check for Wonder Woman. So I hope we can have a very frank discussion about it.
Well, I'm going to be the one that's excited about the movie.
Okay. So
I'm not even a big fan of her. I'm not a big fan of Wonder Woman.
I'll be in the middle and Ryan will be the skeptic. And we have the continuum present already.
Great.
And we can swap those roles out as the summer goes on and as we develop our rapport for this show. We can swap those hats and be like, okay, who's really looking forward to this one and who's not so much?
I agree. Sounds good.
Cool. Great. Well, thank you guys for listening. You can catch our episodes or watching. You can catch us on thegeekembassy.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher and our podcast host Podbean. Please check out the website. We have tons of great new content coming out, including a Pathfinder game that Mark and I are playing. So you definitely want to check that out. So thanks for listening. And until next time, get your geek on.
Woot!
Geeks.
Geeks.